Look, I think the bottom line here is, Moose, the bottom line is that the boy genius, Stearns, okay, doesn't want him and has not wanted him and has never had any intention to bring him back. And I think it's, and I'm more ticked off at the owner, though, than I'm even ticked off at Stearns, because the owner should jump in here and take care of business. I hear the owner really likes Alonso. What are you doing? What are you doing? Get this deal done. They need this guy at first. Not like they don't need him. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to move Vientos to first base and have this kid in his second year turn it, have him try to play another position? You're going to play Brett Beatty at third? Or, I don't know, maybe you could play Ronnie Mauricio there. Maybe you could play Acuna there. I don't know. But I think you're making a major mistake. And I've said this before, Moose, over and over again. I've seen it all. Like, I've been a Met fan since day one. You know, I'm an old faded relic. I've seen guys from Tom Seaver to Daryl Strawberry, you know, to Ray Knight, to Daniel Murphy, all get, here's the door, see ya. And I'm sick and tired of it. And now they're getting ready to do the same thing with Pete Alonso.
With those just few weeks left, the big elephant in the room is the fact that Pete Alonso is still a free agent. David, where do things stand?
Look, I think, you know, we all love Pete. And we've said that many times. And I think as we've gone through this process, we've continued to express that. And we also understand that this is a business, and Pete, as a free agent, deserves the right and has the right and earned the privilege, really, to see what's out there. We also feel really good about the young players who are coming through our system, who have the ability to play at the major league level. We saw that last year, and that's not always the most popular opinion, but we saw that last year, and we're gonna need to see it again.
All right, so guys, hold that for the end, okay? We've made a significant offer to Pete, you know, what Davis said is correct. He's entitled to go out and explore his market, and that's what he's doing. Personally, this has been an exhausting conversation and negotiation. I mean, Soto was tough. This is worse, okay? A lot of it is, you know, we've made a significant offer. I don't like the structures that are being presented back to us. I think it's highly asymmetric against us, and I feel strongly about it. And so, you know, I will never say no. You know, there's always the possibility. But the reality is, you know, we're moving forward, and, you know, we continue to bring in players. As we continue to, you know, bring in players, the reality is, you know, it becomes harder to fit Pete into a, you know, what is a very expensive, you know, group of players that we already have. And that's where we are. And I'm being brutally honest. I don't like the negotiations. I don't like what's been presented to us. You know, listen, maybe that changes. And certainly, you know, I'll always stay flexible. If it stays this way, you know, I think we're going to have to get used to the fact that, you know, we may have to go forward and with the existing players that we have.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, January the 26th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Hope everybody's doing great here as we get closer and closer to pitchers and catchers, to actual baseball, the hot stove that has dragged and never seems to end, I think came to a head at Amazing Day out at Citi Field yesterday. We got a two-part show. First half, we'll talk about basically Boris versus Cohen. Amazing Day turning into a Pete Alonso negotiation, so to speak. We'll get into that. In the second half, a good friend of the show, contributor to Talking Mets Beyond the Mic, had a great piece over at the Beyond the Mic edition, premium content that we offer for the good of the game. David Mills will be chatting with me regarding the Dodgers, what the Dodgers have done. I'm sure we'll get into some Mets talk, but he basically wrote out how back in the 70s, Bowie Kuhn, the commissioner of baseball at that point, stopped the Oakland Athletics from dumping all this play, you know, Charlie Finley from dumping all their players on the Yankees and the Red Sox for fear that it would make the league top heavy, would create super teams. Are the Dodgers doing that now? Does the commissioner need to step in? The new Orioles ownership group talking about a salary cap. We have a couple of years before the next CBA. This could get ugly. Is there a way to prevent it? But, I mean, it all ties in, as we even heard Cohen yesterday talking about, hey, there's only so much money here to spend. And what does that mean for the sport in the near term and the long term? So we'll get into a great discussion in the second half of the show. But let me start out here with Amazing Day. So they all, you know, Amazing Day out, Citi Field, bunch of former players, bunch of current players. Looked like everybody who was out there had a great time. And inevitably, when there was a panel, and a panel with David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza and the owner Steve Cohen, you knew the fans in the audience were going to clamor for Pete Alonso, and the topic of Pete Alonso and the negotiations would come up. Now, I think, and I'll tell you this, Cohen said this is exhausting. And we've lived through some drawn-out negotiations. I mean, let's not forget, Yoenis Cespedes a few years ago, I think dragged out to almost pitchers and catchers, almost the start of spring training. So this is not the first time. I mean, Cody Bellinger signed on February 27th. His contract with the Cubs. So this is not the first time that we've seen, and particularly with a Boris client, you saw it last year with Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, things drag out where, I mean, he's just not afraid to get his players into spring training. And as a hitter, I don't think it's nearly as important to get signed, sealed, and delivered before pitchers and catchers as it is for actually pitchers. And when he took Pete's case on, I think the evolution, and we've talked about this over and over and over again, the evolution of Pete, of who he was, what he meant for the Mets, where his standing was as a hitter, has changed quite a bit in 24 months. So I think Boris and how he's treating these negotiations is as much justifying Pete's investment in him. Because if he gets him anything less than what he originally thought, or puts him in a position similar to Bellinger, where he could get him something now to reprove himself and get him back into the market and eventually get that 6 or 7 year deal. Pete, if I'm Pete, I'm like, hey, why did I hire you? Why did I waste my time? And I think we've gotten to the point where this is truly the business of baseball right in front of us. I had no intentions about talking about Pete Alonso anymore. We've gone over and over and over again about it. We know where I stand. This is a game of chicken. It usually ends ugly. I think it is in the ugly phase. I think the Mets need another bat. I'm a little leery about them going into the season and relying on guys like Acuna and improvements from Alvarez and Mauricio getting healthy and coming in, and Vientos continue to expand upon what he does, and Nimmo, who's got some health issues, getting back to the elite run creator that he's out there. I'm a little leery about all that, because that is part of the 2025 Mets, but doing that without a proven bat like Alonso, even a bat that may not be the same as it was just 24 months ago, makes me a little leery. Now, Soto covers up a lot of that, but we've also seen when Soto's in a lineup that's a bit naked or doesn't have the protection around him, like the late year Nationals, he's going to get walked a lot. Now, he'll get on base. His on base will be through the roof, it'll be through the moon, but that's not going to help the Mets. So I'm a little leery about that. What we learned yesterday from David Stearns is the Mets are not leery about that. The Mets are very confident. And I think that that's one of the things that we need to start to wrap our heads around, is that David Stearns is okay with going into a season and having a roster that evolves in a league with his three wild cards, in a league where, and we'll talk about it more in the second half of the show, where maybe the Dodgers are inevitably going to win 108 to 110 games, get the number one seed, and you're going to have to go at them in a 5 or 7 game set. And if that's the world you're in, I mean, does it matter whether you win 89 and make the postseason or 92 and make the postseason? And let's be fair, here's the Phillies. They go out, they have a really good season, they win the division, and they lose to the Mets in 4 games. They got 4 postseason games. Now, there's that variability where, hey, Pete Alonso doesn't hit that home run in the 9th inning in Milwaukee. The Mets, who had to work hard to even get to the Phillies series, don't have that opportunity. But the real question is, how much do you want to compromise your long and short-term flexibility and not learn about your system by blocking players to avoid 3 games, 3 wild card games that if you're built correctly and you're put together correctly, you feel confident you could win. And that's really where the whole wild card thing, and I think there might be some tweaking of the postseason, and I've always advocated for a wild card week, make it a real incentive for teams to win a division, because that's been de-emphasized. It was de-emphasized inevitably when you had the wild card implemented. It's been de-emphasized even more in a 3 wild card race. That's the conversation for another day. So wrap your head around the fact that the Mets, and especially under Stearns, that roster is going to be fungible. They'll play around with the bullpen. They're going to see what they have with the starting pitchers. They're going to really see what they have with some of these kids. And I get it. You have 2 choices here. You either trade them, you put a veteran laden roster that's ready to rock and roll and go all chips in. And if it fails now, well, you know, where's your depth? And you have some of the issues that some of those 06, 07, 08, and even to a certain degree the 2015 teams that competed had. So I think that's something that we just have to wrap our head around. The second thing I think you really learn from this amazing day and from what transpired during the panel is that all the information you get now, and we've talked about this, and you guys are smart, really a lot of the rumor mill is coming from the agents. And it's clouded with agents speak. It's agents talking about their players and other players. If you are getting stuff from organizations, it's down the line. You know, maybe those who are being consulted a little bit on players or players they're interested in. I don't think that there's a big benefit to front offices leaking information. Now, back in the day, you know, if you were a GM and you had guys like those, all those legacy guys on the beat that right now are your insiders, your Haymans, your Rosenthals, you know, Bill Madden back in the day, his relationship with George Steinbrenner, George loved having his go-to people, and you wanted to control or spin the narrative in the media, you were able to have some of this quid pro quo. And I'm not saying it doesn't go on, but clearly the Mets beat. And I love those guys, Healy and Puma. You know, they're good at going in and getting you stories and giving you the day in and day out feel of the club by being in the clubhouse. And even Martino, who used to be the most plugged in of everybody at SMY, they don't really know anything. I mean, they're around the fringes, but they don't know anything because the Mets are really not giving them anything. So the days of us being entitled to a blow-by-blow insider information about what's going on, they're not going to happen under this president of baseball operations, this owner. And if they are, if it does come out, it's probably a leak that they did not intend to have. And I have a feeling they're going to find it out and they're going to plug it. You didn't hear much about Soto throughout. You've only started to hear how Cohen didn't even believe he was going to get the player 30 minutes before it was announced they were going to get the player. It takes, you know, and that's post-mortem. That's post-negotiation, maybe not post-mortem, post-mortem on the situation. Post-mortem sounds too morbid. And that's that. I mean, what? So as a fan now, it's going to make the hot stove and it's going to make everything a little bit harder. And that's where I think it's important. And I started our intro with the clip of Joe Benigno. And look, Joe is, in some of your minds, a legend here in this town. And WFAN, I grew up, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing here is because of WFAN, because that's how I grew up being introduced to sports. I've told you the story. I didn't have a ton of cable TV. I listened to a lot of games on the radio as a young kid. I didn't have cable till I was 16 years old. And back then, you were able to see some games, but not to the level that you can see today on your phone. And a lot of my consumption, if not 90% of it, was through talk radio. So I have an affinity for Mike and the Mad Dog and Benigno coming in. I used to love him on the overnights, and that shtick worked. But as the world has evolved, as we've had social media, as we've had sites like Baseball Savant and Fangraphs, and we've been introduced to guys like Zach Scott and former executives who now get into the media and really explain how the sauce is cooked, maybe not insider information, but in a way that, they give us more of a feel of how it is. And there's so much Harvard speak out there, but you're starting to see the curtain pulled away. And maybe back in the 90s and certainly when you had WFAN, you had guys like Steve Phillips and the Will Puns, they would go on and they would have conversations. And sometimes the conversations would be more casual. And way before that, it was wild, especially with Steinbrenner in the 80s. But to this day, we've never really had the information that we have now. We understand a lot more than we ever did about the organization from top to bottom. So we have an ability as a outsider, as somebody who does this like me, or even you sitting on the couch who doesn't have a show, who doesn't cover the team independently. You could really educate yourself on how this thing works in a manner where you start to listen to a Joe Benigno. You start to listen to the rantings of a Joe Benigno and to the average fan who went and booed and yelled, "We want Pete," then immediately was smitten and turned by Cohen. And you start to say, well, that's not how it works. And you start to roll your eyes and say, do we really need this noise? Because all this noise is inciting discontent. For some reason in the last 4 or 5 years, and I think it's changing not just in sports overall, we got this idea that we could just make a lot of noise and break things and yell and scream. And no matter how stupid our ideas are or how illogical our position is, we're going to get our way because, we can't get people mad at us. And that has to stop. And basically yesterday, you were told, the fans who were yelling and screaming, we want Pete, like a bunch of you-know-whats, like a bunch of brats, okay? Where, hey, yeah, we want Pete too, but by the way, this is how this is going. And by the way, I'm not here just to be bullied by either the agent, the player, or you into doing what you want. It has to make sense. And the fans were put in their place. And Stearns actually was polite, and Stearns, like every other Harvard-educated, Ivy League-educated GM, is going to play the, politically correct position. And I could tell Cohen probably didn't want to step in, but then said, all right, enough is enough, because this is going to go a route where I'm going to have this moron from WFAN in the corner yelling at the clouds. I'm going to have, some writer come out and write a speculative article. And of course, Boris responded right away with his position. Well, historically, this is what players who are all-star players get, and we'll get to that in a minute. But Cohen basically gave you more than ever you would expect somebody during an active negotiation give you. And he told you, we run the organization, not you, not the media, not Talking Mets, not Joe Benigno, not WFAN. And here's what we've done. We've made a competitive offer. The terms are beyond or unreasonable that are coming back. And until we get within the realm of sanity, I have nothing more to say. Now, you're hearing all sorts of rumors for days that Toronto's closing in on him. And maybe because the Blue Jays have missed out on a bunch of players going back to last year with Ohtani, this is their chance to overpay and get, at least for a year, between Guerrero and Alonso, that combination sluggers in the middle of the lineup compete in the American League East. Maybe they're looking at it where if they sign Pete to a 4 or 5 year deal, he's not a bad landing spot when Guerrero leaves. You've heard all sorts of things like that. I'm not so convinced that Pete, who loves the spotlight, loves everything that New York wants to bring, I firmly believe in my heart, and this is just speculation, I know nothing, that he really wants to be here. I think he hired Boris to get a job done. I think Boris said, I'll get the job done. And I think Boris has now painted himself into this corner where he's got to go to his client and say, well, the best offer is Anaheim, is Toronto, with Canadian dollars and north of the border. And who knows where your you know, media profile goes there. You want to go out to Anaheim, which maybe Anaheim, they've always had talent. They're in the West. The Astros are more fallible. Oakland's Oakland. I mean, Texas won a World Championship a couple of years ago, but who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, it's not crazy to think they could get in the mix there and win. I mean, they haven't historically done that under Artie Moreno in the last decade, but Trout is always hurt. Maybe he finally gets it together. So it's not impossible. It's LA. It's a good place to play. It's got warm weather. It's a media a capital. It's not the Mets. It's not who he's grown up to be. So I think he's at a point where he's got to think. And maybe this is past the point. And listening to Cohen, it sounded like, hey, a lot has to change. And by the way, TikTok, he told Boris yesterday, TikTok, I'm at a point where I'm building my roster out. I might not have room for you. I mean, think about the cojones a Cohen showed yesterday. And yes, I think the Mets need another bat. I definitely do. And if they get off to a slow start and they're struggling to score runs and they're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark and all their kids are struggling early on, they're putting a lot of targets on the back of a lot of players that have potential some variability in performance, including Alvarez, you talked yesterday, because he's going to be expected to make up some of the power. You can make up Pete's production. The Pete that we've seen the last couple of years, the Pete that doesn't hit the breaking ball, the Pete that doesn't hit in the clutch, the Pete that sometimes you feel like is more Dave Kingman than Paul Goldschmidt, that can be made up. But can it be made up with Nimmo getting back to form like he was in the first half, with Alvarez experiencing plate discipline, staying healthy, and getting back to hitting 25 home run profile there? With Soto getting enough protection to do what he does. Can a Jesse Winker and a Starling Marte together in a platoon create a better production than what you got from J.D. Martinez, especially in the second half? Is Jeff McNeil, the second half Jeff McNeil, the version that we'll see? Can Lindor continue his MVP way of playing? I mean, there's things that what I just told you that are feasible. There's some that we'll see. And that's part of the getting to know you phase. And basically they told you, we'd love to have Pete as part of the organization. Here's what we're willing to do. They are not willing to even meet us in the realm of reasonability. And until they do, we're out. And all of a sudden the fans started cheering. And I have to respect that. And let's also put it this way. And I'll use Benigno kind of as a synopsis of the fan base. Because I've gotten emails, I've seen tweets, you know, that was disrespectful to Cohen. You know what makes me laugh is when you're told the truth sometimes, you find it disrespectful. It's almost like you complain for years, and I've talked about this in other shows. You complain for years about the Wilpons, how they ran things, how if only you had an executive like Chaim Bloom, if only you had an executive like Stearns, how much smarter all these organizations are. You finally have that, and now you're complaining, and then you complain all these years about the Wilpons lying to you and not being transparent and having this moving budget and pretending to be a big market team when they're not. And now you have an owner who came out and told you, without showing you the offer that's on the table, how the situation is, and now you're offended by it? Like, that's on you. And I understand the fans pay the bills and they go to the park and there's a certain, and Sandy Alderson talked about this all the time, there's a certain synergy with marketing and giving fans a player that's popular. Let me tell you what that gets you sometimes. It gets you Dom Smith, who had a BS COVID season, should have been traded immediately because you might have gotten something of significant value for him and you were stuck with him and you dumped him for a bag of balls. That's what sometimes listening to the fans gets you, especially when you listen to the fans for stupid reasons. Now, Pete is not in the same category as Dom Smith, but the behavior, the process that I just outlined could be. Now, again, I don't think it's 50-50 anymore. Maybe it's 25-75. He comes back. I still have a hard time believing, and I agree with the Healy's and the Pumas and the guys that cover the team who are around this player that know this player wants to be here. And the Mets need him, maybe not for 6 or 7 years. And originally I was like, hey, you know, spread the payments out, go 6 or 7 years. The more you hear, and we'll get more into this in the second half of the show, the more you hear talk about, you know, owners talking about salary cap and the Dodgers and what the Dodgers are doing and how, you know, it's raising eyebrows across the sport and the lack of confidence you have. And this is where I'll defend Bud Selig. I think Bud Selig knew how to manage and bring people together post-strike, post-94, better than Manfred can. The more you have to say that, you know, you can't just look at this in terms of 2025 and 26. You got to look at a contract and say, what does a 7-year deal, 8-year deal do if I'm faced with a salary cap of $300 million and I got a guy for the next 15 years making $50 to $55 million? What if I'm like the Knicks and I have to round out my roster with, you know, if I have this great core all-star players, but I have to round out my roster with component-driven, controllable, homegrown talent or scrap heap pickups? Well, now your farm system becomes that much more important. And what you do this year to develop the Beatties and the Gilberts and the Mauricios and Jet Williams and Acuna. Again, I'm not a fan of Beatty. I think it's a huge downgrade having Vientos at first and Beatty at third. For all the upgrades you get with Soto, what you lose with the 30 to 35 and 90 home runs for Pete, I don't know if those guys could pick it up. I don't know if Alvarez could pick it up. I don't know. I'm very concerned about Nimmo's health. That's something that we'll talk about as we get closer to spring training. I think the starting pitching is okay. I think the bullpen, obviously, with Minter, I like the move, is improving. And I think that they have some interesting arms that may contribute. We're not gonna, that's not the point of this segment. But, you know, at some point, it takes two to tango. And what we learned yesterday is that the tango is not something that Cohen wants. And he even said, look, I'm flexible. It's not like he's, okay, I have to be at $300 million. But if he's going to go over, if he's going to invest in this player, he's probably going to want something a little bit more that has some Mets-centric components of the contract, and it sounds like they don't have any of that. Now, I'm sure Boris was smiling as he heard, we want Pete, we want Pete. And don't be surprised, I mean, if they had other offers that were significantly better than the Mets and they felt the Mets were out, I think he's already would have signed that. Unless Boris feels that by waiting and waiting and waiting, the closer to spring training, the closer to where you would call it opportunistic time, where a Yankees or a Red Sox team or a team that has, you know, more cachet than Anaheim and Toronto will swoop in and give them what they want, San Francisco. Shoot, you know, does LA, and they got Freddie Freeman, you know, can they really afford? Would they want to bring in another star? I mean, you hear them, I've heard rumors about LA bringing in Bregman or Arenado. I mean, it's like, we made jokes about the 96 Bulls. I mean, it might be more true than ever this year. And, you know, I saw a really good point, too, on X, and it was from a fan, and I apologize that I don't have your name or your handle. But LA let Trey Turner go, a guy that was their best player, I would arguably say, in 2022. And they let Manny Machado go after they acquired him for prospects midseason. So it's not like they kept every big player. They knew when, hey, time to move up, move on. Maybe they saw something in Machado's work ethic. They're like, not a long-term investment. You have to trust the front office. You have invested $10 million a year in this guy, in Stearns. You now have Cohen as the owner. Either you're in on this or you're out. If you're going to behave for the rest of your life like the Wilpons and Brody Van Wagenen and Steve Phillips and Omar Minaya are running the organization, because I understand, I lived through it with you, because that's the PTSD of baseball you have. Well, I'm sorry, you got to get over it. You got to move forward. That's why we talk about the yoke. That's why things are so hard here. That's why it's so difficult to play here. After all you saw, here's, yours truly was telling you on Memorial Day, this ain't ever going to get better, rip this to the studs, start over in Stearns' vision, it's never going to get better with this group, and I was dead wrong, and Stearns, who pretty much said, stay the course, I feel like I've put together a playoff team, he was right. Now, it took a home run by Lindor and a yeoman's effort by Diaz to get a save in Atlanta to get it done, but they got it done. And I know all the deficits that team had and the challenges that team had with the bullpen and how they probably didn't have an ace unless Manaea figured out watching Chris Sale and the brownouts on offense because Nimmo had a lousy second half and JD Martinez fell off a cliff and Pete just wasn't himself. I mean, let's remember something. You have a player that's not hitting the clutch, that's not hitting breaking balls, that has declined significantly in aspects of his game, even defensively. And I'll say this. For the Peter Bust, I see people out there, this goofy guy running around X going, you know, I'm not going to, you know, watch the Mets if Pete's not re-signed. He wears like a polar bear shirt every day. It's a total attention-getting scheme. If Pete Alonso's pop-up, that was dropped, that nobody talks about in Milwaukee, if Diaz didn't come in, I think it was Contreras that he finally got the out on, get Contreras out to keep it a 2-0 ball game. If that becomes a 5-0, 6-0 game over ball game because of that pop-up, are we even having this conversation? If Pete grounds into a double play or strikes out or pops up in the ninth inning against Devin Williams, are we even having the conversation? Are we having this conversation because of one at-bat? Because that's how you get yourself into trouble. And look, Pete's career with the Mets is more than one at-bat. He enjoys the big moment. He would fit really well on a short term for the next 2 or 3 years while you figure out what you got with Beatty and with some of these other kids. I get it. But the Mets are saying that there's a limit to that, and you heard from the team and the horse's mouth what they're doing. Not through back channels, not through media BS, not through ESPN's anti-Mets agenda, from the horse's mouth. And I think he was honest and transparent. Now, you know, Stearns was more couched than his words. But the owners, and I loved it, the owner said, no, I'm just going to get this out here because he's had enough. Because he listens to people like Benigno, like the Barstool guys, people who are well-intentioned fans, but don't know bupkis about how baseball and business works, that don't look at this, and I'm sorry. The reason why this show is successful and exists, and you might think I'm being, and I've heard it, oh, Mike, you're condescending, you're arrogant, you're talking down to the fans. I'm trying to educate you how to be better. How to be better. Because you saw yesterday, when you sit back and you listen and you get good information, the whole framing of the situation is different. All of a sudden, it went from we want Pete boo to, all right, I get it. Let's clap and cheer. And that's that. So you learned yesterday a lot how the rumor mill's working with the agents. Who's running the organization? And look, Stearns and Cohen have cojones of you know what. If the Mets get off to a bad start again, it ain't going to be pretty. It's going to get ugly. And Pete's out in Toronto leading the league in home runs, all of a sudden looking like Paul Goldschmidt. It's going to get ugly. And it puts a lot of pressure on Soto. Soto's hitting a .180 2.5 weeks in the season. You know the boo-boo. We'll be having this conversation. I can see now. The boo-birds are going to be out. But we have a history here where they seem to know what they're doing. So let them prove us otherwise. And as far as Pete, I'm over it. I'm not talking about this anymore. You want to sign with Toronto or Anaheim? Go ahead. You want to sit out spring training and wait for something better? Go ahead. As of now, we've had multiple, and I agree with Cohen, most exhausting. I think it's more exhausting than Cespedes as he dragged out many, many moons ago. That was before this show was in existence. I mean, Soto was exhausting, but that was to be expected. I mean, look. It is what it is. So I'm over it. I'm over Pete. I love him. I love what he's brought to the table. It will hurt if and when he signs with another club. But I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to see what around the margins. I think the Mets might need another bullpen arm. We'll see if they can go out and get a Robertson. I think they only have one roster spot left, if I'm not mistaken. I'd like to see if there's any other component pieces they could bring in. I think Iglesias is one that's still out there. I'd love to see him back. Although you're hearing that Acuna is a big part of the club, you wonder if they've moved on and they're going to go more youth. That might be a possibility. I like Iglesias' leadership. I think it'd be nice to bring him in. Another Boris client. So we'll see. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into a little bit of this, but also, are the Dodgers bad for the game? Are they unbeatable? Are what the Dodgers doing too much? My answer is no, they're not unbeatable. No, it's never too much, because just when you think you've done too much to build a roster, injuries set in, underperformance sets in. Does David Mills agree? Because based on his piece over at Talking Mets Beyond the Mic, he does not. So we'll talk about that more right after this.